Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to the Leadership Focus, an internet radio show geared to everyday leadership, both at work and throughout your life. Each week, we present you with new ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be an incredible leader with a more balanced life. I'm your host, Lisa Pasbjorg, Executive Coach and CEO of Focus Coaching, a leadership coaching and training firm based in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And tonight our topic is Innovative Partnership, the Best Ideas in Healthcare. And this is the latest in our Women in Leadership series. Our guest is Marianne Udall Phillips. Udall Phillips is the director of the Center for Healthcare Research and Transformation, a nonprofit partnership of the University of Michigan and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan to promote evidence-based healthcare delivery, improve population health, and expand access to care. Prior to this, Marianne was the director of the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, an appointed position by then-Governor Jennifer Granholm. Before that, she was a senior vice president at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, a recipient of numerous awards and appointments, including the Anti-Defamation League's Women of Achievement Award, Crain's Top 100 Most Influential Women Award, and the Michigan Women's Foundation 2007 Women of Courage and Achievement Award. She has been in leadership roles for more than 20 years. A perfect candidate for our Women in Leadership series, we are honored to have her here with us tonight. Welcome, Marianne.
Glad to be here, Lisa.
Yes, it's great to have you. Well, I have a lot of questions. We only have 30 minutes. I'm sure this time will go quickly. But first off, I wanted to say, I know that you have a master's degree in public health, but what initially led you in this direction? Was there something in your childhood or your family background that sort of pointed you, or was there some incident that occurred?
Right. That's such an interesting question, because in some ways, ending up in public health was a little bit of serendipity for me. When I was in, as an undergraduate, I was a major in psychology, and I kind of thought I would go into something that was a little bit more clinical, a little more individually focused. But when I finished college, I thought I would do a little bit of work before I went to graduate school. And my mother had always been very active politically, and at the time, she was working for Planned Parenthood in New York City. And I was sort of networking through her network to find positions and ended up working for a family planning organization. And they had an intern the summer I was there from the University of Michigan. She was getting her master's in public health. And we sort of started talking about what public health was all about. And I thought, boy, that really sounds interesting. And I ended up applying and getting accepted and coming here. And I sort of reflected later about what a great fit it turned out to be for me, because I really do better when we're talking about public policy issues than I probably would have done talking about individual clinical issues.
Isn't that interesting? You know, how you picture yourself doing something else often when you're younger, and then some serendipity, or I don't know, or maybe it's fate, but something enters your life or someone talks to you about something or some incident occurs and there's this little shift and it's just perfect.
It's funny because as I look at it now, ending up in healthcare, it was a perfect place for me, and it's an exciting place because so much happens in healthcare and has consistently throughout my career. But in some ways, I could have ended up in many different public policy avenues and probably been very happy. And again, if I look at my mother's career, she went back to work full-time when she was in her 40s. She was of the generation who was always very active in her community and started one of the local League of Women Voter organizations and ran for the school board and, you know, got very active during the 60s, especially around civil rights issues. But it wasn't until her 40s that she decided she wanted to go, that the opportunities opened for her to get paid work. And so she pursued that path. And in some ways, there are a lot of parallels in the kind of work she did to where I've ended up. And that's kind of affirming, I think.
Yeah, I'm hearing that. I'm hearing that. Social change, you know, really making a difference in a broad way.
Right. That's exactly right. With a focus on social justice in a range of different applications of that social justice. Exactly.
And all those issues with women's health and what that means in terms of their position in the world, and that's part
that's
of social justice too. Yeah.
Absolutely. She started the Committee for Legal Abortion in New York prior to the Roe v. Wade decision. And
wow.
So she did a lot of truly lobbying at that point to have abortion be safe and legal for women, because she was so concerned about the number of women who were dying from illegal abortions.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely,
indicator.
Major health issue for women.
Yeah, and still is.
And still is.
Internal health.
Still not a settled public policy issue, that's
I'm,
right.
I'm sure. Well, there's that, and then there's all that and maternal and fetal mortality stuff that is so disturbing about where the U.S. is in comparison to other industrialized nations. And
oh, absolutely.
Work to do. Yeah.
Absolutely. And in Michigan, of course, we've seen very significant rates of increase in infant mortality and in perinatal mortality as our economy has been challenged, you know, more women and more babies who are having difficulty. So very big issue.
Absolutely. Yeah. Lack of prenatal care, or prenatal care until and not available until basically labor starts. Amazing stuff. In not a good way.
Absolutely.
Tell me, I know you've been through lots of leadership roles, and we have a lot of listeners tonight who are either leaders, and of course many of them are women. Not necessarily all of them by any means, but who are pushing at some of those obstacles that I'm sure that you've encountered in your career.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me what kinds of challenges you faced, and how you think you ended up where you are, as successful as you are. What can you share with them about that?
Yeah, so I'll give you just a couple of stories along the way, which I think were kind of formed my view of leadership and had a big impact on me. So the first one was actually when I was a student at the School of Public Health at the University of Michigan. And I happened to be a graduate student the year that the program I was in reached 50% of those who were in the program who were women. Ironically, now many more students are women than men in the program, but my year was the first year that we had 50% of the students who were women. And I will never... Yeah, it was a very big deal, but I will never forget overhearing a conversation between four men in the program who were very upset about the fact that there were now half the students were women, because what that meant was that the incomes we're going to go down in this field.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such an interesting perspective for me, because probably from where I came from, I never occurred to me that having more women in a field would cause the average salaries in that field to decline. But they had this very clear view that, and with some legitimacy, as we know from the studies that have been done about economics and how women are paid in our country, that having more women in a field for them was a really bad thing, because it meant they were going to get paid less. I found it very eye-opening and just really kind of appalling.
It's a really bad thing for everyone, because what it means is if more women are in the field, or it's predominantly female-dominated, then the position tends to be devalued, and women get paid less. And it's not so much about them taking time out; it's about it's valued less. And
that's right.
Consciously or subconsciously, there's way too much of that going on.
That's right, and that's exactly what they were reflecting on.
Yeah. So tell me about I know you did the appointment. You spent a lot of time at Blue Cross Blue Shield. Tell me how you transitioned into this, because this is a real interesting spot for you now. You've been here, what, four years?
Yeah, just a little bit over 3 years now.
Okay.
And, yes, I came to this role from, you know, many years in the private sector as a senior leader at Blue Cross and Blue Shield, and then almost 4 years running the Department of Human Services for the state of Michigan, which is one of the largest departments of state government. There are 10,000 employees, and they deal with the most vulnerable of our citizens, those who are on public assistance, those who are in the child abuse and neglect system, the juvenile justice system, really, really tough cases. And when I took that particular job, I talked with as many of my predecessors in that job as I could find, as were still around in both parties, Republican and Democratic parties. And they all told me that the job running Department of Human Services is one of the toughest in state governments, and nobody should stay in it longer than 4 years. And I came to understand that as I
believe
did
it.
That job.
Yeah.
Because it's a very, very, you know, I mean, it's an area of state government that really literally deals with life and death situations and,
yeah,
and sees people in their most challenging circumstances. And it's a department that has, especially in our current economic cycle in Michigan, has much more demand on its services than it has capacity to meet that demand. So it's a challenge every day. And it was a privilege and a true honor to have been able to do it. And I learned more in those 4 years than I think at almost any time in my past, my history. But there did come to be that point where I realized that I was ready for a change. And what I said to folks at that time was that what I really wanted to do was to be to make a real change from where I had been, because at Blue Cross and Blue Shield I had several thousand employees. And I said, you know, now I'd really like to have a relatively small team that I'm working with, and have a small amount of resources, but resources that we can put to good use and that people come to work every day sort of excited about what we can do. And that's where I am. That's where I ended up. And the attraction of being hosted here at the University of Michigan and having the resources of the university in such a positive environment, and having the support of the partners, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Michigan, who've been just so gracious in opening up their products and their services as an opportunity for us to test new ideas and to learn and to really educate them and others about what can be done in healthcare is just an amazing gift. So the opportunity to leverage those two partners in this environment has really been exciting for me.
I can hear that excitement in your voice. It must feel like you have this small, relatively nimble team that can do a lot, as opposed to this huge team with all these obstacles.
That's right. Yeah,
yeah.
That's absolutely right. And as I say, you know, I feel so privileged to have had all of these experiences in my career. So I had many years in the private sector, and I brought all of that experience when I went to work for the public sector. And now I'm in a somewhat more academic environment, but really trying to be that bridge between academic, you know, research and fact-based decision-making to the practical world about how you actually apply it. And to be able to do that in a nonpartisan way, in a way that can inform policymakers, that can inform health purchasers and consumers and others, that's a very exciting place to be.
Yeah, I guess. Now, you told me when we talked briefly before that you surprised people when you came there.
Yes.
What was it about that was surprising to others?
Well, I think often people who have been in positions like mine in state government go either to other states and do similar kinds of things, or they go to the federal level or to think tanks outside in Washington or elsewhere trying to influence national policy. And many people thought, given my background and my interests, that I would go to Washington, particularly because shortly after I left is when President Obama was elected and made it very clear that he wanted health care to be a priority of his administration. So people kept expecting that any minute I was going to take off and go to Washington, D.C. to work in the health care arena. They were quite surprised that I chose instead to be in a more local environment here and make an impact here instead. And it's, for me, absolutely the right choice. And I think it's a choice that people sometimes don't think about when they look at these different alternatives, why being local might actually be a more satisfying place to be.
Well, we're glad you stayed.
Thank you. And I think the great thing, you know, I probably part of my decision making process came from when I was a student at the School of Public Health, and I did spend a little time in D.C. I had thought even then I would go to D.C. And what I came to realize is that the conversation in D.C., though it has huge impact on what happens in the rest of the country, the conversation is all about D.C. It's a very insular world, and you really, when you're there, you really don't see the impact you're having on a daily basis. And I came to the conclusion at that point that I was more interested in being at the state level, and was fortunate to be able to really have those opportunities to make an impact in the state and to see tangibly how things happen, and be able to be at a broad enough level that I could do policy, but at a close enough level that I could see the impact of those policies on real people. And now I think there's tremendous excitement at being at the local level and seeing how policies can be affected locally.
So tell me about this. First of all, it's a very cool name, the Center for Healthcare Research and Transformation.
Yeah.
And this name came about, you know, this year everybody's talking transformation. But, you know, when it started, that was a new word.
Yeah.
And a new idea. Tell me how that came about, and, you know, what the center is charged with and what you're working on. Tell us more about that. I'd love to hear.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, the name of our center really is important, because there's a lot of centers, especially those associated with universities, that are focused on healthcare research, of course. And what is less done, especially at universities, is to make that connection between research and what happens in the world in terms of how most people get their healthcare and most people get healthcare coverage and population health issues, et cetera. And so our focus and our goal has been on that translation of research into the policy world, into the real world, and to try to, in fact, transform the system. And we want to transform the system in several ways. First of all, we want to increase the amount of care that is provided based upon evidence, not just based upon someone's gut feel about how care should be delivered, so increasing evidence-based care. We want to help improve the efficiency of the healthcare system. There are many estimates out there from reputable researchers that maybe a third of healthcare spending is for things that don't add value, and in some cases actually cause harm to people. The key is, how do you change that picture? How do you cut out that healthcare spending that isn't really needed and improve quality? Because we know a lot about where it comes from. We don't know as much about how to make it different. And so we want to improve the efficiency and the quality and the safety of the system. We want to improve access to healthcare, and so do more to make sure people both have coverage, but coverage alone is not enough. They also have to be able to get coordinated and patient-centered care to the extent that they can. And so we want to work on that as well. And last, we want to improve the population health. And so we know in the country at large, we have huge problems with regard to obesity and things like that. It has a major impact on healthcare spending. We want to help figure out ways to improve population health. And so all of those are part of our mission, and all of them are what we're working on and what we mean when we say we want to help transform healthcare in this country. And we want to use Michigan as an innovative laboratory, as a community and as a state, and as a broad partnership of many people who can show creative ways to do that and inform the national debate.
So brainchild was this? Was this something that happened at the federal level? Did this come from the university? How did this come about?
So the center came about as actually as a result of the sale of MCARE, which was an HMO owned by the University of Michigan, to Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Michigan. And when that sale occurred, the partners in that, the university and Blue Cross, really talked about having this group that could help both of them advance their missions. And both, of course, are nonprofit, and both have a mission to improve health in our state and to do all of the things that I really talked about. And they thought, wouldn't it be great, you know, to set up this group here in Ann Arbor connected to the university that could take advantage of the leadership at the university and all of the folks who are working in a variety of fields here and use Blue Cross as that laboratory to test these ideas. And so it really came from that. And they talked about it for quite some time, and then they came and asked me if I would be willing to run it. And, you know, after I realized it was time for me to make a change, you know, I agreed. And so I came on as the first director in September of 2007. And together with the board, we sort of crafted this mission and, you know, sort of adopted our focus over these past few years.
Well, that's the best kind of job, when you can craft from the beginning.
It is quite exciting.
Here it is.
Yep, it's very exciting. And it's great because we're getting known enough so that people are asking us how we did it. And they want to learn from us how to make faculty more responsive to the community.
Nice.
So that's exciting.
Now, I understand that Michigan was one of only 8 states to be selected for a 3-year project aimed at transforming the way healthcare is delivered.
Right.
And this has something to do with expanding the capabilities of that. It's a new buzzword in healthcare. If people are in healthcare, I'm sure they've heard the patient-centered homes or patient-centered medical homes. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, yes. And, of course, you know, in healthcare, we're famous for creating buzzwords, and they're often really terrible buzzwords because they don't communicate what people really mean by them. And whenever I talk with consumer groups about this concept of a patient-centered medical home, they think we want to put people in nursing homes, which
well,
is
I'm
not
sure.
The idea.
No, I don't want to go to a home.
I know. It's a really misleading term. But the concept really is to have everybody associated with a primary care physician, an internist, a family practitioner, a general practitioner, and have that practitioner work with a team of people so that care gets coordinated and communicated. So, for example, if you go somewhere and have an X-ray and then you go to a different practitioner, the goal would be to have those practitioners communicating with each other so you don't have to repeat those X-rays and so people know what kind of care you've been getting. So coordinated care is what's meant by patient-centered care, and care that's more responsive to patient needs. So having care that's available not just from 9 to 5 when everyone's working, but on weekends, in the evenings, so people don't end up in the emergency room with caregivers that they don't know and maybe in a situation where they don't really need to be in the emergency room. So it's kind of all about transforming how primary care is delivered in this country. And it's an idea that the federal government wanted to test. And they wanted to test it in a really exciting way. They wanted to test it not just with Medicare, which is often what they do since that's what the federal government pretty much controls. They wanted to test it in partnership with private payers and with Medicaid in the states. And Michigan was very fortunate because Blue Cross was one of the first and has, even today, one of the largest patient-centered medical home projects underway that's been in place for several years now, and has thousands of doctors across our state already involved in it. And so it was a sort of a perfect state to start this dialogue about could we get this demonstration project. And we wrote the grant proposal on behalf of the state of Michigan, and we were very fortunate. We're one of 8 states that was selected. It's a 3-year demonstration project, and it'll bring about $38 million in extra funds per year in our state to go to practitioners, to go to primary care physicians, to help them do a better job of coordinating and improving care.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Right. And that's, of course, you know and I know, that's where a lot of the efficiency will come from, because tests don't have to be duplicated. People don't end up in emergency room or urgent care when it could be handled over the phone or with a same-day appointment in a team setting where that they have access to the information before. That's so exciting.
Yes, it's very, it's
I'm sure
absolutely
no small
right.
Pull off well, but so exciting, a great trend.
It's great, and it's also, I think, terrific for the state of Michigan. I think it gives us a chance to show how innovative we are in this state. And one of the things that we're characterized by as a state when it comes to healthcare is we have a tremendous amount of collaboration between payers, between providers and payers, between purchasers and payers. And that's somewhat unique in the country, and I think it gives us a great model and a great platform to show the rest of the country what we can do when we work together, not in competition.
That is great. Mm-hmm. So we have an opportunity to really model for other states what can happen if
we
do. It plays out the way we want it to. That's exciting.
That's right. We do.
So as we approach health care reform, I mean, nobody quite knows where health care reform is going to go, although it's looking like the efforts to, you know, totally make the health care reforms that have been passed go away are kind of not going to happen, and they're going to look at tweaking, if you will, or modifying. But as we approach health care reform or whatever efforts are going to happen to reform the system, what would you say is the role of leadership in preparing for this reform, and especially people that are not necessarily in policymaking positions, but in more in the trenches at the head of organizations that are providing lots of direct patient care?
Right. So we're having those kinds of conversations now, in fact, in Washtenaw County, because every community should be planning for change in healthcare. And whether the Affordable Care Act goes into effect or not, we know that we need to do a better job in providing care, particularly for the low-income Medicaid recipients, the uninsured, the picture of that population will change a lot come 2014 with healthcare reform. But we can do more even today without healthcare reform. And so everybody who's in the healthcare system in any capacity, running a safety net provider, delivering care directly, providing enrollment services or patient advocacy, can be part of a larger group that comes together to talk about how can we collectively improve the system. I'm a big believer in collaboration and partnership. And with partners, we can do so much. And we don't have to wait for the federal government to tell us where those opportunities are, or frankly, for state government to do that. We can do a lot in our local communities. And everybody can play a role in that regard if they want to.
That's great. It's a nice way to end this conversation. And we're just about out of time. Can you tell me, so that we can tell our how they can get more information about the CHRT?
Yes. We hope that you'll go on our website, which is just chrt.org, and all of our publications are there on the website. And if you want more to be on our mailing list, you can ask for that on the website, and you can get more information about what we're doing, and we really like to share. So please do that.
Excellent. Thanks, Mary Ann.
You're most welcome, Lisa.
Thank you for joining us tonight on the Leadership Focus, the show which gives you new ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be an incredible leader with a more balanced life. We hope you've enjoyed the show. And if you have, please go to Blog Talk Radio and make us a friend. To sign up for our free newsletter with more tips and strategies you can use, go to focuscoaching.net on the web. Until next time.